Welcome into the Fan Pregame here on SportsCenter, SportsNet 590, The Fan, Ailish and Justin for the next hour. We've got a big hoops game on the network tonight. Indiana OKC Game 5 series tied up 2-2. That's on SportsNet and SportsNet 1 around 8:30. But our SportsNet Plus offering is just as tasty. It's San Diego and the Dodgers with Shohei Ohtani's return to the mound. That's at 10 p.m. on SportsNet Plus. I will be watching that.
Yeah, it's been a long, long time since Shohei Ohtani was doing the two function thing for a baseball team, and he's done a lot, and we'll go over that since he last took the mound. Has not done it for the Dodgers, though. It will be an opener of sorts, just a couple innings max expected from him, but very cool to see Shohei Ohtani doing the dual thing again, because that's before he was like unbelievably special, just like doing what he's done for the Dodgers. He was special because he did it all. So I'm excited to see that again.
Yeah, it'll be the whole, oh my gosh, this guy is crazy. Like, he does something that no one else really does in the world.
Like two MVPs, and he's just been like working his arm back into starting ability over the last couple of years. It's pretty crazy.
It's going to be awesome. So that's later tonight on Sportsnet Plus. At 6:30, we'll talk to our friend Jackie Redman, who was part of, she has got a great Taylor Swift story, I hope, to tell us around 6:30. Maybe she's going to be there for game 6. We're hearing rumblings about Taylor Swift.
Jackie or Taylor? I can confirm Jackie.
Both. But she might confirm Taylor tomorrow night. Obviously, The game is tomorrow night. But we'll talk to Jackie at 6:30, who will get us set for tomorrow's big game. But let's focus on tonight's big game with Brett Siegel, national NBA insider and reporter for Clutch Points, who joins us. Brett, we appreciate you coming on. Did you expect to be here? Game 5 tied up going into a big night tonight.
No, I really didn't. And I thought this was going to be a quick series for the Thunder. I thought that they matched up much better on paper than the Pacers did coming into this series, but stats don't always tell the full story. And we've seen that time and time again in sports. And obviously the eye test means the most. And so far in this series, you have to give a lot of props to Tyrese Haliburton, Pascal Siakam, Rick Carlisle, and the Indiana Pacers for what they've been able to accomplish. They're playing with energy. They're just playing through struggles at times, and they're just wearing down the Thunder. And we're seeing that with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. I mean, in game 3, he looked really gassed at the end of it. And in game 4 early on, he looked gassed before the Thunder came back and won in the fourth quarter. So everything's on the line tonight in game 5. It's going to be an electric environment in Oklahoma City. Unfortunately, I'm not there anymore. I was there for the last 3 games. Back home now, getting ready for the NBA draft. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be a fantastic game 5 tonight.
Yeah, flowers are deserving here for the Indiana Pacers, but they may have missed the opportunity, it seems, to win the title, given that they couldn't close out in game 4. Do you see that as, it's funny because like these things can be a little formulaic, like we're comparing it to the Stanley Cup final at the same time, but with the NBA it's like, okay, Thunder are going to be favored to win at home the first 2 games, and they let one slip away, and then in Indiana's going to win one, and then there's going to be sort of that coin flip game, and we'll see if the Thunder can get it and potentially win in 5. But because game 1 went the way game 1 did, it gave Indiana an unbelievable chance to win that 50-50 game at home and be in the driver's seat, but they lose it. So are we back to square one now, Thunder massive favorites, or have the Pacers shown that this truly is, despite the venue and despite the situation, we're coin flip each and every time these two teams tip it off?
I think it's certainly the latter of what you just said. And the reason for that is while both teams are facing an enormous amount of pressure, it's 2-2, whoever wins this game is going to be in the driver's seat in the series. You have to imagine that the Thunder are feeling the pressure of this series, because I don't think they imagine this being 2-2 heading back game 5 to OKC in what is now kind of a must-win scenario for them. Because if they go back to Indianapolis down 3-2, I'll tell you what, I'm going to be picking the Pacers in game 6. And that's just kind of the nature of it. That place was one of the most crazy environments that I've been a part of in Indianapolis for those 2 games. Those fans were loud. That place was rowdy. And the Thunder did not play well in Indianapolis. They barely escaped with a game 4 win. And they avoided going down 3-1 in this series. So I think that the Thunder need to win tonight, and they need to win loud. They have to be able to really put their foot down in this series, claim a double-digit victory on their home court, because even if they win and they go up 3-2, but this was just a 3-4-point game, 1 or 2-possession game, you're giving the Pacers a lot of confidence heading back home to the point where they can even this series, and they're going to be heading back to OKC for game 7 potentially, where they're going to continue to have that momentum. They're going to continue to have that confidence. And that's the last thing the Thunder need at this point. They need to put their foot down. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Jalen Williams, Chet Holmgren, all three of them need to have great games in their own right, and they really need to be able to shut the door on the Pacers in this one.
I'm so glad you brought up that like mentality that a lot of these teams might be feeling going into the like the fourth quarter, for example, because I think three of the four finals games we've seen so far, the team that was trailing in the fourth quarter ends up coming back. I just wonder like what you think the mentality is for these teams, for the coaches, for the players, knowing that no game really feels over. If you're down, you'll find a way. You've done it before. You can kind of feed off of that belief. And knowing how important tonight's game is, if you are trailing at any point, you just look back at a game a couple days ago and you can find that belief to find a way to win game five.
Right. And it goes back to the fact that we're dealing with two teams that don't have a lot of finals experience. The Thunder, the only player on their roster that hasn't been on a deep playoff run before was Alex Caruso when he won a championship with the Lakers. And then obviously on the other side of things, you have Thomas Bryant, who's been a part of teams in the NBA Finals before, and you have Pascal Siakam, who won a championship in 2019. But the vast majority of these players out there that are performing at a very high level right now, they've never faced this mental struggle of the NBA Finals. You can say that you've been in seven-game series before in the playoffs, but it's different when you're competing for a championship, especially now that it's a best-of-three series. These are the three most important games, potentially, that these players will ever face in their careers. And that weighs on these guys, especially since most of them are in their younger 20s or mid-20s. So when you look at the fourth quarter, for example, and why we've seen so many collapses, is because you can't count these teams out. Sometimes you have teams that show those lapses. And in game four, for example, it was the Thunder who took advantage of the Pacers' lapses in that fourth quarter. They thought they had the game won, and the Thunder just kept fighting, and they were able to win. But then you look back earlier in the series, games one and three, it was the Pacers that did that to the Thunder, even though OKC got off to those hot starts in those games and great shooting performances early on. The Pacers came back and won. So the mental aspect of this series, in my opinion, outweighs the physical aspect. And granted, guys aren't their healthiest right now. They're being run down. But it's all about that mental fortitude. If you tell yourself that you can fight and you can continue to move on in those games, you're going to have the upper hand.
So you mentioned earlier Shea looking tired at key moments in this series. And I, as a Shea backer and truther, refuse to believe that his stamina is just failing him. I think it is. Well, another Canadian in the series, and Andrew Nembhard making life very difficult on him. But if there was a breakthrough moment, it seems, for the Thunder, it's that switching Nembhard off Shea Gilgeous-Alexander yielded some pretty impressive results for the Thunder. Is it that simple? If they can just shake Nembhard from Shea can be Shea, and therefore the Thunder can be the Thunder, which is on paper the superior team.
Well, there's a couple answers to this question. The first of the whole defensive aspect of Nembhard on Shea, yes, he's done a fantastic job, and that's part of the reason why Shea has been contained at certain points. But you also have to factor in that Shea's not only given it his all on offense, but also defense in this series, because the Pacers are unlike most of the teams that the Thunder have had to get through to get to this point in the playoffs, where they have a bunch of athletic guys that run ball screens, that look to run in transition. And Shea, he's one of their primary defenders in OKC. So he's not only having to give it his all on offense, but also defense as well. That's where some of the wear and tear in this series has come from. I think that it's been frustrating for him at times, especially we saw it last game when TJ McConnell had that one-on-one against him in the corner. We saw some frustration from Shea after that play, and he was able to lock in and they won the game later on. But that all factors back to him being tired at times. It factors back to those struggles against Nembhard and whatever. But it's really an interesting situation in this series of how the Thunder can get going on offense. And yes, it is finding ways to get Nembhard off of Shea at times. It's finding ways to manipulate those ball screens and maybe get Chet Holmgren or Isaiah Hartenstein on a smaller defender. So I think we're going to see a lot more of those ball screens in game five by Mark Daigneault. And obviously I think there's going to be an emphasis on three-point shooting, because making only three threes in their previous game and somehow winning, it's not really a recipe for success against a Pacers team that can light it up from the perimeter.
Since Justin asked about Shea, I'll ask about the other, I guess, superstar in a sense on the other side, Tyrese. I wonder, when you're watching, how clutch he's been in these big moments. Four game-winning or game-tying shots in the final 5 seconds in this postseason alone. I mean, that's kind of in its own superstar status of being clutch. Has he solidified himself in that upper echelon of big game players, big game moments, and does he have another one up his sleeve possibly?
For sure. And I think even though he didn't play much, he has an Olympic gold medal, and we can't discredit that. And he's an Olympian. He's a multi-time All-Star. one of the best passers in the league. He's consistently up there in assist to turnover ratio and being one of the most clutch players in that aspect. So he deserves to be a star in this league. He deserves to be called that. And anyone who thinks that he's overrated or whatever, it's just not true. And they're just not watching him play, because this guy is two wins away from leading his team through an NBA championship and probably being named finals MVP if they do it. So, yeah, I think that narrative, he's completely shut the door on it in this postseason run.
Jalen Williams had himself a game in game four, some really key moments for the second banana with the Oklahoma City Thunder. You know, it's taken him some time, I think, in pretty much every series to really figure out exactly how he was going to be his most effective self. But do you think J-Dub has gotten there where he knows exactly how he needs to operate in order to be the guy who can make a difference for OKC in this series?
I think he's figured it out in this series alone against the Pacers and their defensive schemes. And over the last two games, we've seen that. He's had 26, 27 points in Indianapolis. We'll see what happens when he goes back to OKC. But the difference for me is that he's not taking those contested jumpers anywhere, whether it be from three-point range or the mid-range. I know he likes to get near that free-throw line area and pull up. But he found a lot of success in Game 3 getting to the rim. He shot 11 free throws in that game, shot 50% from the floor. And in Game 4, it was the same thing. Shot 11 free throws, made all 11, 18 shots, made 8 of them. So it's that ability, the downhill aspect, to get to the rim and either be fouled or finish through contact, that he was countless times just attacking the Pacers' defense, putting them on their heels and drawing fouls. That was the big storyline of Game 4 of how many fouls were called. But when you look at it, Jalen Williams was productive in terms of drawing those fouls. There wasn't much controversy about the ones that he was drawing. He was able to get the Pacers in foul trouble, create problems for Aaron Nesmith, Miles Turner in the paint as a shot blocker coming over to help. So I think that's the big difference right now from the Thunder's offense, is if they can continue to get that kind of production from Jalen Williams and continue to get him driving downhill towards the rim, it opens up a lot more space for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander to operate, especially in the fourth quarter.
We're chatting with Brett Siegel, a national NBA insider and reporter for Clutch Points. We've got Game 5, Indiana, OKC on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 1 at 8:30 p.m. tonight. Okay, so if we're talking Jalen Williams and his breakthrough, is there someone on the other side for the Pacers that maybe mirrors like an unsung hero or the most improved, maybe even in terms of just getting themselves a moment in this finals to be recognized? Because these two teams, as we mentioned, small markets, maybe not a lot of people have been circling Jalen Williams on their, you know, must draft next year in their fantasy leagues. Is there someone on the Pacers side that's impressed you as well?
Yeah, and I think that it's somebody that a lot of teams are circling, saying we need to find one of these players in the draft. And it's a type of mold of a forward that guys have been looking for in front offices of what they've been looking for. That's Obi Toppin. And the Indiana Pacers got him for 2 second-round picks from the New York Knicks. And look what he's doing in this final series. He's averaging double-digit points off the bench, around 6 or 7 rebounds per game, shooting 50% from the floor. And I believe he's shooting around 40% from three as well in this series. He's just been super reliable. And while he does have some of those careless turnovers at times because he's going too fast, or some of those hard fouls that he tends to draw in transition, he's just the energizer bunny of that team. Like, they play through him. He's the heart and soul for them. And anytime he comes off the bench, just like T.J. McConnell, they just create instant energy that those fans in Indianapolis resonated with. And this team has really backed throughout the entire playoffs. I think Obi Toppin's been fantastic. He's earned himself a lot more money on a future contract that's upcoming. So I think that in order for Indiana to potentially win Game 5, win this series, Obi Toppin has to be their third best player next to Pascal Siakam and Tyrese Haliburton.
Yeah, and he was just that in Game 1 when they stole Game 1 in OKC. We'll see if he can do it again. We're talking to Brett Siegel, national NBA insider and reporter for Clutch Points. Okay, so we're headed to and you're switching gears yourself, but a very important offseason. It could be a massive one in terms of turnover. It could be a pretty subdued one in that, hey, second apron thing is something everyone's trying to figure out. But we got two defensively dominant teams here that are competing and going shot for shot in the NBA Finals. Do you think teams around the league are looking at this thinking, hey, we've got to rethink exactly what we're going to be? Because look at what is having success. It is defense. It is depth. It is guys who are just dogs out there. And I think the Oklahoma City Thunder are the best example of that, with their litany of defenders and guys who can play deep down their bench. Is this NBA Finals going to have a massive impact on what we see this offseason? Or are NBA teams just going to NBA team and throw caution to the wind?
It's going to be a little bit of both. I think it depends on most team situations. But, yeah, they are taking notice of what has worked the last few years. And it's not just this year. But when you look back to that 2022 championship with the Golden State Warriors, they had depth. They had guys that could run in transition. And that was kind of emulated by the Denver Nuggets with a guy like Bruce Brown, with Christian Brown. So those molds of players on the wing, that's really what guys are looking for nowadays. It's why the Orlando Magic went out and got Desmond Bane the other night, a guy that they seem can fit in right next to Franz Wagner and Paolo Banchero as a three-point shooting threat, and also a guy that can put the ball on the ground and score at will. And then on the opposite side of things, a change in philosophy for the Memphis Grizzlies. They're fully committed to building around Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr. And what they're going to do is they're now going to look for those athletes to surround them with, add more depth to this roster, add more youth, just like we've seen with the Oklahoma City Thunder, where they play through Shea and they have a bunch of athletes around them, guys that can create for themselves and defend. We're going to see a lot of that with the Memphis Grizzlies, where they're going to be a fast team playing around Ja Morant, but they're going to build a defensive identity around Jaren Jackson Jr. with their depth. And we're going to see many other teams follow suit. We've already seen it with the Houston Rockets, with what they've been able to accomplish this season as a two seed. They took Stephen Curry and the Warriors to the 7 games in their first round series as a great defensive team. The New York Knicks have tried to build a great defensive team, but obviously they're built around their starting lineup. But we're going to see a lot of different movement around the league this season, both from teams trying to get out of that second apron. And then you're going to have teams like the Orlando Magic, who see an opportunity where they can pay up a little bit and they can rise up the standings. And who knows, maybe they'll be the next Indiana Pacers in the East, where everybody slept on them and they wind up going on a playoff run. So there's definitely opportunity around the league. I would say there's more in the Eastern Conference for teams like an Orlando Magic to make a big trade and move up, with teams like the Celtics and the Milwaukee Bucks expected to take a step back. But out in the West, you have about 7, maybe 8 teams that all have championship aspirations. So that's where things are going to get really interesting. And that's where we're going to see what teams can duck the second apron while still remaining competitive.
So perhaps the new model is OKC. Perhaps the new model is Indiana. But the biggest name out there is Kevin Durant, who maybe doesn't seamlessly fit into either of those two models, but I'm sure will generate a lot of interest here over the next coming days and weeks. What do you expect to happen with Kevin Durant this summer?
It really depends on the best deal that the Suns can get, because they have Kevin Durant's preferred list of teams that he wants to go to: the Miami Heat, the San Antonio Spurs, the Houston Rockets. Could they reach an agreement with one of those teams? Absolutely. But one of those deals has not come through yet. They haven't received a deal from any of those three teams that has really piqued their interest, and it's for different reasons. It's the Spurs not willing to include the second pick for Kevin Durant. It doesn't seem like that they will. You have the Houston Rockets of, well, what young assets would they be willing to give up? Will they give up both Jalen Green and Jabari Smith Jr. and Reed Shepard and that 10th pick? That seems like a lot to give up for Kevin Durant, but that's what the Suns kind of want. If they're going to give up Durant to an in-conference rival and instantly make them a championship contender. And then in the East, it comes down to whether or not the Miami Heat will be willing to part ways with both Andrew Wiggins and Khalil Ware, the rookie standout big man that had a terrific all-rookie season for them, and just a guy that's looked at as one of those unicorn-type players, where he's a seven-footer that can put the ball on the floor, he can play in pick-and-roll situations, do a little bit of everything, and the Suns see him as a long-term building block if they can get him back in a Kevin Durant trade. So that's really where the holdup is with those three teams. Outside of that, there are still teams that are pursuing Kevin Durant. The Minnesota Timberwolves have been one of them, even though Durant has made it clear that he does not want to go to Minnesota. And then obviously you have Masai Ujiri and the Toronto Raptors, the team that you guys definitely want to hear more about, of what's going to happen in Toronto. Well, the Kevin Durant stuff is real. If there is a path to getting Kevin Durant and they can come to an agreement with the Suns on a potential package, whether it be RJ Barrett and Jakob Poeltl or Emmanuel Quickley and Jakob Poeltl and that 9th pick, there is a path to getting Kevin Durant. It comes down to two things. One, if the Raptors are willing to relinquish all those assets, and two, whether or not there would be a path to Kevin Durant potentially staying, because unlike the Kawhi Leonard situation in 2018-2019, this team's different, where they're not necessarily in the best position to contend right now. We see a path forward for Toronto, but unlike 2018, when they were coming off a great season and they look like a championship contender in the East, we don't see that yet from the Raptors. So does it make a lot of sense to go out and get a 36-year-old Kevin Durant who could wind up on you and enter free agency the following year? Does it make sense to give up all those assets? And I think that's where the main conversation lies right now in Toronto.
Just one more quickly on this, Brett. Appreciate your time tonight. With the Raptors falling down the draft lottery and ending up with ninth, like how much do you think that that maybe handcuffs some of their potential opportunities to make a splash around the draft? Or does that seem like still a chip that they'd be willing to play, whether it's for a move like what you just mentioned with KD or even Giannis and all that discussion? I think the people in this city really wanted them to see like a top 1, 2, 3 and then to end up ninth. I just wonder in your perspective if that's kind of changed a little bit of their ability to make some of a splash this offseason.
Well, this pick is certainly in play to be traded, whether that be for a big star, whether it's Durant. I don't see anything happening with Giannis before the draft, so we can kind of cross that off. But if that pick isn't going to be moved for Durant, I still think it's in play to be moved if the right player's not there on the board for the Raptors. Who that is, kind of a mystery right now. Some say that they like Kaman Malawach from Duke. Others say that they're targeting a guy like Trey Johnson if he falls, Con Knepel. So it really depends on who's on the board there. But there will be teams calling to try to move up into the top 10. And Masai Ujiri has been able to gain a lot of future assets before in draft night trades and making trades with draft picks. I wouldn't be shocked if he does so again to move down a few picks in the lottery or even out of the lottery altogether. I still see the Raptors having a first-round pick this year, but where that ends up, that's the mystery right now. There's a lot of teams that have been calling in that 7 to 10 range of trying to move up in the draft. And obviously, the Raptors are going to be open for business if they don't land a guy like Kevin Durant, because their tax bill, it's kind of right on the edge right now, that with Scottie Barnes and Brandon Ingram both making $38 million. Quickly's making over $30 million. Barrett's right at that line. So I don't view what the Raptors have right now as being their complete roster heading into next season. I think that there's still moves to be made with draft picks. I think that there's still moves to be made with guys like Emmanuel Quigley and RJ Barrett to try to further this roster and make it better so they can become a championship contender once more.
I love it. Thanks for little tidbits, because Raptors fans are anxiously waiting to see what happens now that their season has been over for a while. I know the draft's just around the corner, so we'll keep our eyes peeled on your Twitter page, of course, and all your reporting you're doing with Clutch Sports. We appreciate you coming on, Brett. Enjoy the rest of this Stanley Cup Finals. Maybe you're watching that, too. Enjoy the rest of the NBA Final, and we'll definitely chat soon.
Absolutely. And tomorrow we got a mock draft coming out. It's not a traditional mock draft, but it's going to feature some trades and it's going to be some hypotheticals. And I will just say we do have the Raptors involved in a potential move with that ninth pick. So stay tuned on that.
We will be looking at that tomorrow. Thank you so much, Brett.
All right. Sounds good, guys.
Take it easy. It's Brett Siegel, National NBA insider and reporter for Clutch Points. Little Raptors potential trade moves. Okay.
Yeah, I'm kind of in, like, screw-it mode with the Raptors. Like, yeah, bring on Kevin Durant. Let's do it. Like, let's get crazy.
Whatever, eh?
The process, like, I know it's the
it's
intention
flawed,
was,
yeah.
Hey, we're going to take a step back and retool and reload, and it's going to be great. And then you drop to 9, and it's like, okay, just make something happen. Like, okay. If you get Kevin Durant, life will be more interesting around here, and they're going to, frankly, win more basketball games. Mm-hmm. So I'm having trouble actually seeing a downside.
Right.
I don't know how a team with both Brendan Ingram and Kevin Durant is going to look, but screw it. Let's see it.
Okay. We will make sure we take a look at what this proposed trade is tomorrow when that drops, and Brett Siegel will fill us in on a potential that we can maybe get our hopes up for. Before we take a quick break, we've got the Olympic rosters part one announced. So all of the qualified teams for the upcoming 2026 Winter Olympics have announced, was it six players?
Six players.
Six players each. And we'll just focus on Canada, USA to start because we don't have time for all 12. But some interesting additions and maybe like restrictions at this point.
Exclusions.
I'm interested in your thoughts on this. So Canada, of course, announcing today Point, Crosby, Reinhart, Makar, MacKinnon, McDavid. And I was mostly surprised at the involvement of Sam Reinhart and the exclusion of Mitch Marner. But I started thinking, well, they want to do a lot of marketing around this. Can they market a Mitch Marner doesn't have an NHL team? Is this kind of, you know, a bit confusing to have him on some of these graphics that'd be posted wearing a Leafs jersey that he's not a Leafs jersey?
Got Four Nations jerseys that they could show him in, so
but
probably not an issue.
The Leafs tweeting it out, he's a UFA, he's not really on your team. I just thought that was an interesting one. I think he should have been named over Sam Reinhart.
Sam Reinhart's, you know, one win away from winning a second consecutive Stanley Cup.
I just think
Cup
that he's not in the top
trophy
six
nominee
quality for me.
He wasn't great at the Four Nations,
yeah.
But Mitch Marner wasn't all that great at the Four Nations either. He did score the overtime goal against Sweden. Did set up
and set up the
Connor
overtime
McDavid
winner
with again a pass.
I think he was pretty good.
I think a pass 95% of NHLers could make.
Why not Sam Bennett on this?
But I digress.
Where's Brad Marchand?
Sam Reinhart has scored 50 goals. Sam Bennett's 50-point guy in the regular season.
Brad
Marchand. Bit of a difference. I like Sam Reinhart here. I'm okay with it.
Okay, interesting.
I might go Devontae's over Sam Reinhart.
Okay, that makes sense. For the United States, we've got both Tkachuks, Austin Matthews, Quinn Hughes, Jack Eichel, and Charlie McAvoy. You'll notice no goaltenders named. And I thought that was interesting considering they have such a stockhold of amazing goaltenders, but they haven't decided who would be the first one to
Well, announce. If you have 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, I guess you don't have one. I think there could be a competition. Mm-hmm. They've left Jacob Slavin off the board.
McAvoy addition over Slavin was shocking.
And Werenski. They got a plethora. They could do 6 in their sleep. The problem is that they don't have necessarily 18, 23 mm-hmm. like Canada does. So mm-hmm. their top end is really, really good. I don't think you could quibble with it. I think they were wise to keep it open on the goaltending front because it should be a battle. And I would just allow them to battle. None of you were picked. Go earn the spot. I know that Connor Hellebuck just won a Hart Trophy, but go earn it again. I think it's actually a good decision from them.
Yeah, I thought that was smart, very tactical, and to be able to market this next X amount of months around the two Tkachuks, Austin Matthews, of course. I think there's a lot of good decisions there, just like marketing-wise, brand-wise. And then no goalies means that we have to talk about who's going to be the number one goalie for the next couple months. So very smart decisions by Canada and United States in terms of who they're marketing their Olympics around. Let's take a quick break because Jackie Redmond is going to join us on the other side. We can get her thoughts on some of these teams as well and what goes down tomorrow night. Game 6 with the Cup in the building. We'll be right back.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The JD Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Fan Pregame here on SportsCenter, SportsCenter 590. The Fan, Ailish and Justin, getting you set for Indiana OKC tonight, Game 5 on SportsCenter, SportsCenter 1. We've got that at 8:30. As we mentioned, a very nice SportsCenter Plus offering of the Dodgers and the Padres because Shohei Ohtani is making his return to the mound. That's a 10 p.m. start. You can watch that on SportsCenter Plus. Looking forward to seeing Shohei.
And also looking forward to Game 6 of the Stanley Cup Final tomorrow night. Cup will be in the building, and so will our next guest.
Jackie Redmond of NHL on TNT and NHL Network. Jackie, long time no see. You've been making headlines today. I've seen some viral tweets of you, so thank you for coming on our show, too.
Viral for the right reasons or the wrong reasons?
Great reasons.
I'll leave that up to the audience. But happy to be on with you guys. It's been way too long, so I'm happy to get some FaceTime with two of my faves.
Very nice. Yes, I saw lots of Jackie Redmond with maps today showing others where Canada ends and where United States begins. And I was very proud of you because we will keep Sidney Crosby as our own. We can't have the Americans try to take him.
Listen, we can't. If the Americans start claiming Nova Scotia, we're losing 3 of the best players league. We're losing Marchand, McKinnon, and Crosby. And we absolutely cannot allow that. So
thank you for that. We needed that. We was like geography teacher, Jackie. And we'll ask you about Taylor Swift too, because we just got to start. So Game 6, a potential, not a guarantee. What's your Taylor Swift take for tomorrow night?
Well, listen, I did the same. So here's the thing. Let me just, for the people out there who care about this and who don't care, because they're both equally as vocal when it comes to Miss Swift. So I had a source, Game 4, tell me that Taylor Swift was going to the game with Travis Kelce. I did not tweet it when I first had it because the source asked me not to. And also I just didn't want to be wrong. So I was like, oh, let me wait. And then it ended up being very true. And I did tweet it out before the game, but I waited a little too long. And then for this one, I was like, same source telling me that they have it on good authority, that there's a strong possibility they come back for Game 6. So I went with it and then found out pretty quickly after when things started surfacing that the Kelce brothers are in France, that as much as Taylor Swift has a jet that I'm sure can get her lots of places very quickly, I don't think we'll be seeing them at the game. So while Taylor Swift fans are very upset about this news, the anti-Taylor Swift fans are very happy about this news. So you know what? Someone's happy. And I'm glad I went with it either way.
Yes.
So we'll see.
Okay, so with the Kelseys in France and Taylor doing whatever Taylor is going to do instead, the security detail can be for the Stanley Cup because Game 6, there will be playing for the Stanley Cup, that being the Florida Panthers. Oilers obviously have a chance to extend it and bring it back to Alberta as they famously have. But I guess since Game 1 here, Jackie, has it been pretty clear, because there's a miracle comeback in Game 4, but has it been pretty clear that Florida is the A side? Has it looked like a team that is clearly better than the other playing out so far through five games in the Stanley Cup final, or am I not giving the Oilers enough credit?
You know what? If you asked me this question after game two, I would be like, oh, this is such an even series. Not because I think both teams have necessarily equal rosters or equal depth or any of that, but because numerous times this postseason, I've been in the building when McDavid and Draisaitl needed all of 5 minutes to completely not just change a game, but change a series. I was there for more than half of the series against the LA Kings. We've just seen them be able to climb back and change a game like that. So after two games, I thought, you know what? This is going to be an even series. This is anybody's series. It's going the distance. You can't convince me otherwise. But now that we're five games through, I do think that Florida has established themselves as the more dominant team. I don't think that it's particularly close. And that's not a slight on Edmonton. I just think top to bottom, every which way that you slice and dice it, I think that the Panthers, aside from not having the best player in the series, absolutely have the best team. And I think if you think otherwise, I just think that you're wrong. I think Florida's more dominant. Does that mean they win the Stanley Cup? No, because hockey is like that. Hockey is not always fair. It breaks your heart, and the best team doesn't always win, especially if it comes down to a one game winner take all game seven. And so I do think Florida's the better team, but I have no idea if they will take home the hardware for the second straight year. I honestly, early in the series, it might have even been in the conference final. It kind of blends together for me. Paul Maurice made a comment that I think rings true in this final in particular. He said it's not really a seven-game series. It is just a one-game series, one over and over and over again. And so that's how the Florida Panthers kind of look at their playoff lives, if you will, even before the cup final. And I think it's really, really true in this series. It's not a seven game series. This is just game by game. And I think both teams are wise to take it that way, because if Edmonton can win and go back to home ice with a chance to win it all, I mean, it's anybody's, but I think Florida's been better. Do you guys agree?
Yes. I mean, when we saw game five and three, I think I wrote those down as like maybe the real gap being exposed, because those first two games, it was, you know, just like a hair. You were just shocked at how close these two were.
Yeah.
But when it happens more than once, it's not really an outlier to me. And I just feel like it has slipped a little bit. But I want to ask you about Edmonton, specifically about Connor and Leon, because you said you've seen them turn a game on its head on a dime. Like, is that the game plan tomorrow? Is for these guys to will this team back to Alberta? Is there any other way? Like, does it have to be on their shoulders?
I do think it's on them. I do. I think that they are two of the best players in the world for a reason. I think there's a reason that Edmonton consistently presses their load up Leon and Connor button whenever they're in trouble, whenever they're leading late, whenever they need sort of something, like that's what they go to. And for good reason, I think they'd be stupid not to. It's just, they can't play 60 minutes.
And play
and
net.
And if they tried to play D. And play net and play D. And, you know, if they played 60 minutes, they wouldn't be as effective for minutes 45 to 60 anyways. So I do think it falls on those guys, whether that's fair or not, but it does. I think that we're going to see Connor McDavid unleashed tomorrow in game six. I wouldn't be surprised if he came out and had a 3-point night or something like that for the Oilers. The problem is that while McDavid and Draisaitl, when they're off the ice, that's when Edmonton is vulnerable. That's when Florida can strike. I don't know where that exists for the Panthers. Like, they are so deep, top to bottom, every single line. It's like relentless. Even their fourth line has such a solid identity and makes an impact for them in a different way than the top nine, but still effective. I just don't know where Florida's vulnerable. And I would say going into this series that where Edmonton really has a chance to do damage and get to the Florida Panthers, it's on the power play. Mm-hmm. But the power play hasn't really been as lethal of a weapon as it can be for Edmonton. And they've had the opportunities. That's what's kind of crazy about it. Like, yeah, they've had some power play goals. But you talk about the Edmonton Oilers getting four, five power plays in most of these games and not coming away with the victory and not really burying the Panthers. I think that's a problem. I think that that's the one area where I would say Edmonton's got a real advantage. And I don't think that they've really used it as much as they can. There's been some games where the Panthers have given them opportunities. The last one's a great one. Like they had some power play chances when they were trailing in that game and they couldn't really get a sniff. They couldn't get a goal. So I think if they can convert on the power play, that'll help. But I don't know. Florida's going to be so disciplined tomorrow. It's going to be annoying for Oilers fans, I think.
Yeah, yeah, they're going to be. They're going to be who they are. Like, they have shown nothing if not consistent play over these years and these series and these games. You just kind of know what to expect. There might be a blip from Florida, but they get back to their center very, very quickly, and their center has been most dominant so far in the last 3 years, and especially in these playoffs. We're talking to Jackie Redmond, NHL on TNT, and the WWE. Of course, you know, Pat McAfee, WWE, like go down the list covering the Stanley Cup final. But before all that, you were a Canadian hockey fan. And I want to stick on McDavid here because I've got this thing in the back of my head where I worry about Connor McDavid now, because this may not work this year. Didn't work last year. We're a decade plus into his career. The Oilers have some big decisions to make. They don't potentially have a goaltender. And I feel the need, I need to see him win. Like it's something that justifies being the best player of this generation, being the best player for Canada, being one of the Mount Rushmore guys potentially in the NHL. Do you feel any of the same concern about him, about what his career might be? Because I need to see him win, and we may see another opportunity squandered here, and there are only so many opportunities, Jackie.
Yo, full disclosure, I just had this conversation in the pool in Florida with Brian Boucher and Kenny Albert. We were talking about this exact thing. I mean, I think we're feeling the pressure of that as fans, which means Connor McDavid is absolutely feeling that pressure to win in terms of building his legacy as a champion, building his legacy as a winner. You know, they asked me on Pat McAfee's show today, like, if he doesn't win, do we start wondering if he is a winner, if he has what it takes? And I said no, because I know we had that conversation with Ovechkin, who didn't win early in his career, but I don't think anyone's going to come out of this and question if Connor McDavid can win. I think we're going to look back at the early years in Edmonton and go, this was what we worried about when they weren't figuring out their roster, when they had four first overall picks in 6 years or whatever it was. It's good for hockey for the best player in the world to win championships, right? That's what you're defined by when it's all said and done. And unfortunately for Connor, he's the last 2 years, if they lose this one, they've run into one of the best teams we've seen in the last 25 years. And I'll say that about Florida, even if they lose this series. Mm-hmm. Like, three straight cup finals is nothing to turn your nose at. And so, you know, timing is everything. Timing, health, and matchups, right? Like, those things matter in hockey and getting through a grind of 2 months of playoff hockey. And I think for me, it's like, if Connor and the Oilers can't win, how does that impact Connor McDavid moving forward? Does he stay? Does he contemplate leaving? Do the Oilers blow it up? Do they run it back because they got all the way to the final and just make a couple changes here and there, maybe between the pipes? Although I don't think this series has really been about goaltending as much as people want to say that it is. It's a great question. I don't know. And then if you leave, now it's all on you. If you go try to win a cup in, you know, Toronto or something, if we want to be extreme about it, like he's got to be feeling it, and I want to see him win, and I start to wonder if the chances become smaller if they don't do it now. So I don't know.
Okay, we've got the Olympics coming up, Jackie. Wait till we're talking about this in the Olympics. Like, let's say Connor loses this Stanley Cup and then Canada, like, you know, there's so much pressure on that gold medal already, but we're going to be like, we need to see him win this gold medal or else, like, you know,
well, we're getting to the situation. Like, we just saw how this year went, right? Like, he's supposed to win the Hart Trophy every year. Yeah. He got 10th. Well, he wasn't
even
a consideration.
Get a first place vote, right?
His best hockey was at the Four Nations. Like, he's in this zone now where he's going to, like, pace himself in advance of big moments. And it's probably a good thing. And it probably means that he kind of knows who he is and what's important at this stage. But ultimately, what's important for Edmonton is making good roster decisions, because this roster, I guess, was better than last year's, but it's not where it needs to be to match depth. And if you're going to have Brad Marchand on a third line, like, there's going to be areas exposed by a team like Florida. So, they need to make good decisions, first and foremost. If you can sign McDavid this summer, you have 8 years potentially to make good decisions, but the pressure's on and the margins are thin.
And the decision, too, of, like, obviously you're going to sign Connor McDavid 10 out of 10 times if he wants to be on your team. But how much does that cost the Edmonton Oilers? And how much does that impact their ability to make good roster decisions moving forward, right? Like, that, all of these things sort of impact each other. And so I do not envy the position of any GM in the NHL, but especially the ones that have the best players in the world, because the pressure is on them to bring in the right pieces to make it all work. And even then, you still need to perform at the right time. You still need guys to stay healthy. I mean, what does this series look like if Zach Hyman is in the lineup? Mm-hmm. Like, it is a different series to mm-hmm. me if Zach Hyman is there, because as much as, listen, we all love Corey Perry, and we love that Corey Perry has been such a factor for the Oilers this postseason and has contributed in major ways and scored major goals. But he's doing it. He needs to be doing it where Brad Marchand's doing it, in the bottom half of the lineup, not in these pivotal roles that sort of take away from your depth when you have to move Corey Perry up, right? So I don't know, man. It's so stressful. And I'm not even an Oilers fan, and I'm stressed. No, I'm like, this is stressful. But you know what? Like, this series might be far from over. Mm-hmm. We've had, you know, multiple overtime games. They've already showed that they can not just come back down 3-0 in a game. They came back 3-0 in the series last year. Like, I do believe that all of those things give the Oilers confidence. The problem is that they're facing a Florida Panthers team that also got better and more confident and smarter after what they went through last year. So it's just hard to imagine the Panthers not getting it done in game six with everything that they've experienced, right? Like, I've had conversations today with people that are like, well, they, you know, there's a pressure with winning on home ice and your family's there and everybody's talking about the Stanley Cup. I'm like, yeah, but, like, they've been through this now.
They did in game seven last year, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, they've been through this. So I almost think blowing the 3-0 lead the other night to the Oilers almost, like, makes them even stronger coming into
kinda
this game.
Kind of woke them up,
because they all
snap out of this.
They all, yeah, like, they already kind of did the bad thing where, like, they kind of, like, took their foot off the gas and maybe felt a little too comfortable and maybe, you know, what I just, are they going to do it again? I don't know.
Okay. I think we got time for one more, Jackie. Let's pivot off this series, because we got to ask you where you want to see Mitch Marner land. Where you want to see him. Not where you think. Where you want to see him land.
Toronto's still an option, at least for this hypothetical. Maybe
where
not for Mitch himself.
Where you want to see Mitch Marner land.
Listen, in this hypothetical, and I say this with all due respect to all parties, I don't want to see Mitch Marner go back to Toronto. Like, I don't. I think, like, the chapter is done. If you, even if you took all, like, actual hockey reasons out of it in terms of, like, the roster and the money and the salary and all of that stuff, I still don't want to see him go back to Toronto, because for whatever reason, and I think there are multiple places that you can lay the blame, it's very clear that the relationship between Mitch Marner, the Toronto Maple Leafs, and the fans, media, market, it's sour. It's not good. I don't know how we got here. I think everybody shoulders a little bit of the blame, including Mitch, and including the organization. Like, everybody's at fault. But it doesn't seem tenable, right? Like, it seems very There's a lot of tension. It doesn't feel good. Feels very toxic. Why are you going to bring that back? I don't want anything to do with it. In terms of where I would like to see him go,
it can be like biggest villain move. It could be quietest place for him to just enjoy his
far
life.
Far away from Toronto as possible.
It could be
perhaps.
Rival that you want to see him
close to Toronto as possible, perhaps.
I mean, I don't want to see this. But, like, him being a Florida Panther would be wild.
I think that'd be the craziest story.
I think that'd be crazy.
It would be insane. Yeah. I don't want to see it, though. I think, you know, I've been talking about how I don't know if they can make it happen. I don't claim to be, like, a salary cap expert or anything like that. But I think it would be interesting to see him in L.A. Mm-hmm. I think maybe he could do – I mean, he's going to do well no matter where he goes, no matter where he plays. I think we all know that. But I think LA could be interesting. I don't want to see him go to Vegas. I don't know why. I don't really have a reason for that. I just don't want it. I don't know why I feel that way. I'm just like, it's not Vegas. Like, let's go somewhere spicy. Let's go somewhere interesting. But I guess, you know, we'll see.
Okay.
Well, we're going to learn a lot about Mitch Marner and what priorities are based on where he decides to go.
I
do know.
Very instructive.
This will be very instructive.
I can't wait. I mean, this offseason, Mitch Marner included, but for a lot of reasons, is so intriguing. Like, for people that talk hockey all summer long, like, this is not going to be as tough a summer as some previous.
We'll have some content.
I do have one question for you guys, though, as it relates to the cup final. Mm-hmm. Because this is coming out of my pool conversation, so I can't take credit as an original thought. But is Edmonton's best, like if they come out with their roster as is and play their best, are the Panthers so good that even like 60% of their best game, is that still enough to beat the Oilers?
No, I would say if the Oilers play 100% their best, I would say that's better than 60% of Florida. I think I feel confident saying that.
I would say that too.
Yeah,
you 60, think so?
60 is a big 60's number.
Like, yeah.
If they're absolutely at their best, that means Leon and Connor are going to do some damage. If they're across
great
two lines, that means you're going to get 50% of that. The equation being severe damage, and that puts a lot on, I guess, Brad Marchand to continue scoring a million.
What
goals.
About 75%?
70's getting close.
70's tight.
75's getting close.
I'm going to say...
Again, the best of McDavid is maybe the best we've ever seen. Like, so I got to give him that.
He's like,
and he's been...
But the best of McDavid is still only like, let's go extreme here and say that he plays like 30 plus minutes in regulation. That's still half the game where he's not on the ice.
That's true. But Jágr said today that he can see God in McDavid. So you can't mess with God. Like if he sees God in McDavid, then they'll have to win.
God versus the Rat King.
That's your series.
I will say there have been multiple moments, not just in this final, in the whole run for the Oilers, where I just sit back and I go, they feel like a team of destiny for some reason.
There's still time.
I don't know why. There's just been certain things that have happened in certain games and moments where I go, they feel kind of like a team of destiny.
Yeah.
But the Florida Panthers have had a lot to say about that. So I guess my point in asking the percentage question is like, does Florida even need to be at their best to beat the Oilers? And I don't think they do.
We got to let you go because we have 1 minute till our,
I know,
our
I'm sorry. Ends.
But it's okay. But I like this thought-provoking question. We'll circle it back on our show tomorrow. But I think it's they don't have to be 100%, but they can't take their foot off the gas pedal. I think Edmonton will bring 100 tomorrow. And we'll see if there's
if
a game
enough,
seven.
Yeah.
We got to let you go, Jackie. We really appreciate your time. I know this is the day off. Go back in the pool, enjoy yourself, and keep up the great work. We love watching all your stuff.
Thanks, Jackie. Appreciate it.
You guys are the best. Bye.
Thanks so much. That's Jackie Redmond, NHL on TNT, WWE, and more. We do only have 1 minute, so let's get to our best bets to wrap up today. Shohei Ohtani, of course, making his debut tonight, pitching on Sportsnet Plus. My Shohei special for you is a parlay where it's one strikeout, one home run, and one stolen base, which is 32-1. And if you want to get super spicy, 2 Ks makes it 50-1.
That's interesting because like it's a normal day after
opening
the game. Just
and
like
he is dramatic.
Fire 30 pitches out there and just do what you've normally done.
He always shows up in the big moments. So I love this one.
Win unanimous MVPs and World Series and everything. Mm-hmm. So I like that. Just like kind of an update on the two championship series. Mm-hmm. If you like the Oilers, McDavid at 800 right now to win the Conn Smythe, I think that's better than winning the series. And Pacers, if they win tonight, Pacers to win from, or they lose tonight, excuse me, which they're supposed to win from behind is 10-1 to win game six and then shock OKC in game seven. I think that's a value play as well.
75% of the teams that win game five in a 2-2 series going to win the series. That's why that's so long.
There you go.
Okay, we got to run. Everybody have a great night. Enjoy game five, and we'll see you tomorrow night.